This man dealt with him for who he was, not his family name. It was a rare thing.
"So let me get this straight," Steiger said, seeking to divert the conversation. "After your term of service is completed, you are going to find a woman?"
"It hardly matters now," Hollock said with a heavy sigh and sat down on his bench.
"Raise a family?" Steiger said, a grin finding its way back onto his face.
Hollock scowled at Steiger. In the dim light, Steiger thought he saw the other color. After a moment, the expression softened.
"Yes, a family would be nice, but I also intend to petition the court for a civil service position. I am sure my father will do nothing to help me. Perhaps a lower-level provincial judge, or something like that. Enough to live comfortably."
"A peaceful life, then?"
"Until you arrived, I led a very peaceful life." Hollocks chuckled, and then made a show of glancing around his cell. "Now it seems I'm destined to face either the hangman, or end my days on the point of a riven sword."
"Now you're getting into the spirit of things," Steiger said with a chuckle. "I have found that humor can be a soldier's best friend."
"Is that so?"
The outer door rattled. They only brought food around midday, but bright morning sunlight flooded into the interior of the dim jail from the small slit windows. Steiger and Hollock shielded their eyes against the penetrating light as the door swung open.
"Been getting some rest, sir."
"Tiro!" Steiger exclaimed, lowering his hand and standing. He was pleased to see his sergeant healthy and well. "How are the men?" Steiger's sergeant walked up to the cage.
"Doing well, sir," Tiro said, studying Steiger and then Hollocks.
He gave an unhappy scowl at what he saw.
"They've been enjoying life some, resting, eating, and generally getting soft. Since we got here, they've not had an officer to push them."
"Guilty as charged, I'm afraid," Steiger said. "I've been shirking, you see."
"I would never dream of accusing an officer of dodging his duty, sir," Tiro said. "Besides, we both know that you're not the type."
"Varys?" Steiger asked. "How is he?"
"He's mending," Tiro said, still recovering his wits with that nasty knock on the head. "He's got one heck of a bump, but Nera's been taking good care of him."
"Nera?" Steiger was immensely relieved to hear that Varys was doing well.
"Who?"
"That woman we rescued back at the farm," Tiro said. "She's become quite attached to our corporal." Steiger had never learned the woman's name, and now felt slightly embarrassed that he had not made the attempt. It had been nothing overt on his part. He had just had a lot on his plate at the time.
"Any news?" Hollocks asked, stepping nearer.
"That's why I'm here," Tiro said. "A messenger along with a troop of cavalry has arrived from the Third."
"Can you believe it? The general sent a ranger. I've not seen one since the wilds. Along with the troop commander, he's with the Tribune now."
Steiger stepped up to the metal bars of his cage and gripped them.
"What word does he bring?"
"I don't know," Tiro admitted.
"I was in the barracks and heard word that he had arrived. They were in there with the Tribune before I could learn something."
Steiger wondered what it meant. Was the messenger here with a reply accepting the Tribune's report? Or did he bring word of something else? Was Steiger to be delivered to the general to face trial?
"Why didn't you come sooner?"
Steiger asked, eyes narrowing. "Why wait so long?"
"I was ordered to stay away from you, sir," Tiro said.
"Well, really, the jail. The Tribune gave orders for all of us from the Seventh. He even put extra guards on this building, and on our barracks."
"So the Tribune lifted the orders, then?" Steiger asked.
"No, sir," Tiro said, and shifted about uncomfortably.
"Sergeant, you're willfully violating orders?" Hollocks said with a deep frown.
"No, sir," Tiro said, suddenly looking very offended. "I would never violate orders, sir. Without the lieutenant here, my boys have been idle too long. I'm looking for busy work that needs doing, is all. It occurred to me that the jailhouse may need to be swept, the waste buckets emptied, that sort of thing, sir."
Hollocks's frown deepened, if that was possible.
Steiger swallowed as Tiro's gaze returned. The old sergeant had violated his orders to check on his officer. Steiger found that he was touched by Tiro's concern.
"Sergeant," Steiger said, "though I welcome your visit, I would not want you to fall under a charge. You need to go."
"Aye, sir," Tiro said, with a glance behind him. "In good time, I will."
"I meant it," Steiger said. "You need to go now."
"I was let in by the sergeant of the guard, sir," Tiro said. "He will warn me when it is time."
Why do you violate orders?
Steiger raised an eyebrow.
It's a sergeant thing, Tiro said, shifting his stance.
Tiro, Steiger said, what's the real reason?
The auxiliary sergeants are getting a tad concerned, sir, Tiro said. We talked, and they believe without a doubt the Riven are headed this way.
I see, Steiger said, eyes narrowing. There was more to the story than Tiro was telling. The sergeant gave in with a heavy sigh.
Prefect Merritt, he leads the 25th Toldean cohort that's stationed here, Tiro explained. He's a good sort, sir. A bit old like me, but he fought in the wilds and knows which end of a sword is the correct one to jab an enemy with.
Tiro took a deep breath.
It seems he believes the enemy is coming, especially after he and I spoke, sir. He asked me a lot about you, and I answered honestly, sir. Among other things, I told him you was one of the best officers I've ever served with, and that what you told the Tribune, it was the God's honest truth. I told him about Cora Toll, the farm, and what Kreese said about the army that's coming. Well, that got his attention. He's put his men and ours to work on the defences, sir.
Tiro paused for another breath.
When the Tribune asked what they were doing, Prefect Merritt explained the need to get his idle boys to work. Like we do with the Legion, sir. Busy boys means less trouble, sir.
Tiro paused.
To be honest, it might have been my suggestion, but you'd never get me to admit that. Well, he sort of sent me to see the Sergeant of the Guard, sir.
Steiger was amused with the long, rambling explanation on what had been going on while he had been confined. It was good to know that there were defensive preparations underway.
What of the cohort that marched? Steiger asked. Has there been any word from Lears?
Nothing, sir, Tiro said.
It's one of the reasons I came. They marched to Ida and were supposed to send a messenger back. When none came, the Tribune dispatched a rider. He didn't come back either, sir. So the Tribune sent another rider.
Tiro shook his head at that.
We know what's coming, sir.
Steiger closed his eyes, feeling helpless behind the bars.
He was stuck here doing nothing when he should be out there, helping to strengthen the defences of the fort.
Once the enemy arrives, Tiro said, the Tribune should let you out. Then there will be plenty to do.
Thank you for your visit, Sergeant, Steiger said. It is much appreciated. Now I would ask that you leave. I don't want to see you placed on a charge.
Aye, sir, Tiro said, and turned toward the door, when a commotion outside caused him to freeze.
A man wearing a richly cut brown cloak stepped through the doorway. The hood was pulled up. The dim light of the jailhouse served to conceal his features. Though he had never met one before, and despite the man not wearing a uniform, Steiger realized this was the Imperial Ranger. Steiger could not help shake the feeling that he had seen this man before.
The ranger glanced around before his gaze settled upon Tiro. Using both hands, he pulled the hood back. Steiger sucked in an astonished breath.
"Ellie!" Tiro exclaimed with excitement. "By all the gods and the High Father's beard, is it really you?"
"You've become old," came the reply in a pleasantly soft, sing-song kind of voice. It almost sounded human, but was tinged with something alien at the same time.
Steiger blinked, not quite believing his eyes.
Before him stood an elf, and not just any elf, but a friend of Tiro. Ellie was tall, standing several inches above Steiger. He was whipcord thin, his face was that of a young man, barely out of his teens, with blue almond-shaped eyes and sharp, pointed ears that poked out from his sand-colored hair. Ellie's face, framed by his long hair, was almost too perfect. Carved by a master of unparalleled skill, and flawless to a fault, it was like one of the numerous marble busts that adorned the palace back in the capital. Tiro and Ellie embraced, the sergeant patting the elf heavily on the back. After a moment, Tiro stepped back, holding Ellie by the arms.
"I've become old," Tiro said, "but you've not aged a day."
"It is but a curse of my race," Ellie said. The sergeant turned, and Steiger was surprised to see tears in the old veteran's eyes.
"Ellie," Tiro said, wiping them away. He gestured toward the cage.
"I would like to introduce you to my commanding officer, Lieutenant Steiger."
Ellie stepped past Tiro and up to within a foot of the cage. Steiger felt as if he were being studied. He did not like the feeling.
"I have come a long way to find you, Lieutenant," Ellie said softly. "General Treem sends you his greetings."
Ellie reached into his cloak and withdrew a dispatch. which he passed through the bars. Steiger opened the dispatch, tilted it toward the light from the door, and scanned the contents. He looked up at Tiro, and over to Hollux, then back to the dispatch.
"Our boy's got through," Steiger said excitedly to Tiro. "The third is on her way."
"The Legion should be here in 2 days," Ellie said. "General Treen thinks you cause..."
Ellie paused, clearly contemplating his words.
"No, that is not the right word. He thinks trouble finds you."
"It seems the General might be onto something, sir," Tiro said with a chuckle.
"But the Tribune sent a message to turn the third back," Steiger said.
"I was with the General. He became..."
Ellie paused and looked at Tiro.
"Mad or angry, which is the better word?"
"I bet he became angry," Tiro said, with a satisfied look thrown to Steiger.
"Yes," Ellie said. "The General became angry. The Legion is still coming. I offered my services to ride ahead with the advance party and act as a representative."
A cavalry officer strode into the jail, the heels of his riding boots conking off the wooden floorboards. The sergeant of the guard who delivered the meals followed closely on his heels.
"Carbo!"
Steiger exclaimed in surprise at the sight of the cavalry officer who had become his friend over the past few weeks. Carbo's expression turned thunderous, and he rounded on the sergeant.
"Get them out of there! Now!"
"But, sir," the sergeant spluttered, "I have orders from the Tribune holding these two prisoners for trial."
"Sergeant," Carbo lowered his voice, "your Tribune has been relieved of his command. If you don't get them out of there this instant, I promise you that I shall see you broken back to the ranks. Furthermore, I shall personally see to it that you spend the rest of your days in service to our Emperor mucking out the latrines with your tongue."
The sergeant didn't even bother to reply. He fumbled with the keys on his belt, untied the loop, and then hastily unlocked the door to Hollux's cage before turning to Steiger's. Once the door was swung open, Steiger stepped out. Carbo offered his hand, which Steiger took in a firm, friendly grip.
"Carbo," Steiger said, "I would like to introduce you to Lieutenant Hollux. I consider him a friend.
Any friend of Steiger is a friend of mine."
Carbo shook Hollux's hand. "It is a real pleasure to meet you, sir, and an honor."
Hollux seemed taken aback slightly, but handled it well.
"It is my pleasure, sir, especially since you got us out of these damned cages."
Carbo suddenly stepped back, holding his nose, looking between Steiger and Hollux.
"You both need a bath," Carbo said, "and badly."
"That I do," Steiger admitted. "It's been far too long since I properly bathed."
"Well, let's get you cleaned up and into a fresh tunic," Carbo said. "I'm afraid there is a lot to be done, and not much time."
Chapter 15 Steiger strode out of the officer's quarters and into the bright morning sunlight. The temperature was much cooler than the day before. It could almost be described as crisp. It was possibly a sign that the unseasonably hot weather was finally giving itself over to fall. Steiger certainly hoped so, for he was more than tired of the oppressive heat. He was wearing a freshly laundered tunic drawn from the fort's quartermaster. The coarse wool itched only a little. The tunic was the kind reserved for a ranker, but it was clean, and for that he was grateful. Slightly larger than he would have liked it, it also wasn't quite his size. If he kept the tunic, it would have to be tailored for a better fit. The military typically held a jaded view of the enlisted man's tunic and took the one-size-for-all approach. Officers, men generally of some means, had their tunics custom-made from better-quality wool. Steiger had also taken the opportunity to bathe. Being clean for the first time in weeks felt wonderful. To be free of the dust, dirt, and grime was a small mercy in itself. He had even managed a shave, using hot water, not the usual frigid river or pond water he had made to do with over the past few weeks. Combined with the sleep he had caught up on while being confined, he felt like a new man.
"Better watch it, old boy," Steiger said to himself, with a slight chuckle. "If you keep this up, you may just spoil yourself."
Steiger surveyed his surroundings. The officers' quarters opened onto the parade ground, which was situated behind the main gate. Fort Covenant was a large one, as rear echelon garrisons went. Built to hold two cohorts by necessity, there were more than a dozen single-story structures. The buildings of the fort spread out to his left and right,
They included several barracks, a warehouse, coal cellar, stable, barn, smithy, mess hall, and centralized keep that housed the headquarters and the tribune's personal quarters. 3 stories tall, the fortified keep towered over the other buildings. It backed up to the parade ground and was built upon a raised mound. The keep reached higher than the outer walls, and from the top, he presumed one would have a clear view in all directions. The buildings were made of timber, using whole logs from the nearby forest. Stacked one atop the other, and interlocked at right angles, the logs formed solid walls that had been plastered over for insulation. The outer defensive walls of the fort were also constructed of these logs, each of which was at least 3 feet in circumference. These had clearly been selected not only for their thickness, but also their height. Starting from the edge of the parade ground and traveling around the entire fort, an earthen rampart backed up to the outer wall. The rampart was thick with trimmed grass. The top of the rampart served as a platform for the defenders to walk upon, with the defensive wall rising another 3 feet above it, forming a protective barricade. Steiger found the fort itself neat and orderly. Nothing seemed out of place. It spoke of either a fanatical devotion to order or a disciplined garrison. He wondered which one applied to Tribune Declan. "Excuse me, sir." An auxiliary had come up, interrupting Steiger's musings, and gave a smart salute. "Yes?" Steiger returned the man's salute. "Prefect Merritt requests your presence on the wall above the gatehouse." The auxiliary pointed. "He's right there, sir, with the other officers." "Thank you," Steiger said, and started off. There were few men about as he made his way across the parade ground. The grass in the center had a distressed look to it, a sign that it potentially saw frequent use for drill. Steiger wondered where everyone had gone, for the interior of the fort was mostly deserted. There was only a handful of men on the walls. The near absence of the garrison made Carbo's troopers stand out. Horses saddled, and with reins in their hands, the troopers waited near the gate. Steiger wondered where they were off to as he strode over to the gatehouse and up the back side of the rampart. "Ah, Steiger," Merritt said, turning at his arrival. Carbo, Hollux, Triad, and Ellie were there, but the tribune was absent. Since Declan had been relieved, Steiger had found his absence hardly surprising. Hollux gave Steiger a welcoming nod. He also wore a fresh tunic and had washed. "Good of you to join us," Merritt said. "I assume you feel much improved at having been given the opportunity to clean up." There was only stiff formality in the prefect's tone. It was suffused with neither malice nor friendliness, but instead a controlled professionalism. In his late 40s, Merritt had short, cropped hair that had thinned and long since grayed. He had a large, reddish scar that ran down the left side of his neck and disappeared into his tunic. The prefect was in excellent shape and seemed a no-nonsense kind of man. There was a hardness in his manner and a distant look to his eyes that Steiger had come to associate with veterans who had seen hard times. He instantly liked the older officer. "Yes, sir," Steiger said. After so long in the field, it was a welcome change. "I can well imagine, having been there myself upon occasion." Merritt sucked in a deep breath. "Let's begin, shall we?" The prefect paused a moment, as if he were gathering his thoughts. "There is undoubtedly an enemy army coming our way. In addition to Lieutenant Steiger's report, General Treem has only recently confirmed that, through intelligence from other sources. He has charged me with the defense of this fort. Furthermore, he has asked that we," Merritt said with emphasis, "hold until the third arrives. It is the general's intention to bring the enemy to battle, preferably here in this valley. He does not want them to break out into open country. With any luck, the third is expected to be here sometime tomorrow evening, perhaps a little later." Merritt paused briefly. "Now for the bad news. Upon my request, Lieutenant Carbo sent scouts up the road in search of the enemy. They encountered advanced elements less than 2 miles from the edge of the forest." "Infantry or cavalry, sir?" Steiger asked. Carbo stepped in. "Cavalry. A strong column, too, followed closely by infantry." "Yes," Merritt said. "We have to assume that the infantry represents the beginnings of the enemy's main body." Merritt turned to Carbo. "That means you must depart shortly, before the fort is surrounded." "You're leaving?" Steiger was surprised by this. "Yes," Carbo said, in an unhappy tone. "I was instructed to deliver the general's orders, see that the change of command was carried out, assess the situation,
and report back.
"What of the Tribune?" Steiger asked, curious as to Declan's fate. "Is he going with Carbo?"
"No," Merritt answered with a slight frown. "Though he has been relieved, the Tribune has elected to remain a few days before returning to the capital. He has not said so, but I believe he intends to hold the line with us. I believe him to be an honorable man."
Steiger understood Merritt's meaning. The Tribune was in disgrace and would likely face a trial when he returned to the capital. Fighting alongside the defenders might be a way for him to partially redeem himself.
"If you would not mind, Prefect," Ellie spoke up, drawing their attention, "I would prefer to remain also."
"Ellie," Carbo said with a look of concern, "the generals expect you to return with me."
"I shall, in good time," Ellie said, then added a slight shrug. "But not now. Prefect, I request the honor." "Honor is the correct word, right?"
Merritt gave a nod.
"Yes, I request the honor of fighting alongside you and your fine men."
"It's been a long time since I've had the pleasure of serving alongside elves." Merritt's stern expression cracked a little, and he let slip a smile.
"I welcome the services of a ranger. However, with what's coming, I urge you to consider going with Carbo. I cannot guarantee I can hold this fort."
"I feel I can be of better use here," Ellie said. "I will stay if you will have me."
"Very well, then," Merritt said. "I am honored to have one of the highborn with us. Thank you."
"It pleases me much to fight alongside such gallant men." Ellie gave a slight bow of his head.
"Well," Merritt said, and bounced on his heels. "That's settled. Let's review our defenses and the challenge ahead of us." The prefect stepped up to the barricade. The other officers followed. Steiger placed his hands upon the top of the wall and looked over. Beneath him, at least 100 men worked in the 2 trenches that stretched clear around the fort. They were busily cleaning out debris and replacing old stakes with fresh ones. Beyond the outer trench, several men moved with large canvas bags, tossing bits of metal into the long grass. It looked as if these men were sowing caltrops. Simple yet vicious, caltrops were incredibly hard to spot. When tossed, one side of the four-headed spiked weapon always managed to point upward. Should an unwary person step on one, it was certain to cripple. A man working below in the first trench spotted them and pointed up at the officers. He shouted something, and a hearty cheer went up from those nearest. Steiger realized after a moment that they were his men. He waved back. They cheered even louder. Tira was below, among the men, grinning like a bear. Steiger felt a lump form in his throat as he looked down upon his cheering men. His gaze then shifted to the road north. He loved his company, and yet he had led them here to a place that would soon see them locked in a desperate struggle. The likelihood of many of them ending up fodder for the worms was high, and yet Steiger felt as if he had made the correct decision. This fort had been recently an isolated backwater. Now, because of his actions, Fort Covenant had become a critical position that had the potential to affect the course of the war.
"Back to work," Tiro snapped. "Bend your backs, you bastards."
The cheering ceased, and the men returned to their tasks.
"I have heard a great deal about you," Merritt said to Steiger. "The general even mentioned you in his orders to me. It seems you show real promise as an officer. It is good you are with us."
"Yes, sir," Steiger said, feeling slightly embarrassed by the unexpected praise. Merritt did not seem to begrudge his family name, something until recently he had not come to expect in anyone serving. Steiger noticed, however, that Tried looked like he had swallowed a frog. The lieutenant carried a small wax tablet, which he tapped on the palm of each hand.
"I fought under your father," Merritt continued. "Before the Civil War, that is."
"I did not know, sir." This was the first time Steiger had spoken with the prefect.
"It was a long time ago, and I was a junior officer much like yourself."
Merritt became unfocused, as if reliving a different time. His gaze sharpened.
"Well, that's in the past. It is time we speak on what must be done going forward." He pointed out into the field as he addressed those gathered around. "To assault these walls, the enemy must get past 2 outer trenches. Make no mistake, they will do so. We have neither the artillery nor sufficient numbers of bowmen to make such an effort a costly venture to our enemy, nor do we have the ability to hinder them in any meaningful way. Once they have overcome the trenches, they will either assault the walls or the gate. It is possible they may attempt both simultaneously. Any attempt to break through the gate shall prove futile.
We will deny them that opportunity by shoveling dirt up behind the gate, thereby rendering the battering ram ineffective. With luck, this will buy us some time before they switch all their efforts to the walls.
Sir, Lieutenant Tried spoke up, what if they just bypass us? Wouldn't it be easier for them if they went around us? We're so few, hardly enough for an army to worry much about. I should think they have nothing to fear from us.
There is little chance they will bypass us, Merritt said with a heavy breath, as he regarded his lieutenant with disappointed eyes. Our enemy cannot afford to leave us to their rear. This north-south road is their lifeline. Moving around us would pose an unacceptable risk to their communications and supply. More importantly, this fortification is all that stands between them and open country. I have no doubt they will attack. They must reduce and overcome this fort before they move on. Merritt paused for breath. In a few weeks, winter will arrive and all campaigning for the season will end. The winters so far north are terrible. Our enemy knows this only too well. Their goal, by coming here, is an attempt to outflank our army that is mostly to the northwest. They mean to cut off supply by thrusting around and to the rear of the legions. Should their effort prove successful, it will mean a military disaster on a near unimaginable scale.
Merritt fell silent a moment.
I want to be plain. This is a grave threat, not only to the war effort, but to the Empire as well. The Third is on the march, as you already know. General Treem has informed me our legions farther north have also begun pulling back, giving up the hard-fought ground they have taken this summer. Should the Third be defeated in battle, it will fall to the rest of the army to hold off the enemy until winter. That is, if the enemy does not get behind them first and cut supply. Should that happen, there is the very real possibility that the enemy's two armies may combine.
But if the Third is defeated, Tried said, then that means we will be also.
Yes, Merritt said. Now you understand the true nature of our position.
Yes, sir, Tried said.
Good. We have two auxiliary cohorts, Merritt said. Mine the 25th Toldean and Hollux's 9th Lightfoot Taborian. We also have Steiger's 7th, with just enough men to be considered a light company. That gives us nearly 700 with which to hold this fort.
Are there any questions so far?
There were none.
Lieutenant Tried, Merritt said. You may give us your report on our supplies and available equipment.
Yes, sir. Tried began to read from his wax tablet. We have plenty of water, since it is well drawn. Food will not be a problem. Our stores are sufficient for months. Concerning missiles, we have 2,200 short spears and 12 large barrels of arrows. He paused and glanced over at Hollux. I would think that plenty for your bowmen. Do you not agree?
Maybe, Hollux said, tapping a finger against his chin. My men can shoot awful quick. 12 barrels means perhaps 4,000 arrows combined with what we brought.
Well, it may not last us all that long.
Hollux stood straight as he looked over at Merritt.
I will impress upon my men to make their shots count, sir.
That will be much appreciated, Lieutenant.
Merritt nodded for Tried to continue with his report.
We have the equivalent of 5 barrels of oil, the lieutenant continued, which must be used sparingly. And, of course, we have pans for cooking sand and boiling water. Our 4 bolt throwers are being assembled as we speak. We have nearly 900 bolts. He pointed to the covered towers on each corner of the fort. Hammering could be heard from inside the nearest tower. They should be completed within a couple of hours. Our single catapult is also being assembled. He pointed down toward the parade ground. We have plenty of round shot.
Steiger could see several men working to assemble the machine. He let slip a slight frown. The catapult was on the smaller side, perhaps capable of tossing a 2-pound ball. It would do little to frighten the enemy or cause damage.
That completes my report, sir.
Gentlemen, Merritt said, we don't have much with which to hold back the tide, other than sheer grit and determination. Since that is all we have, that is what we shall use. I am counting on each of you to do your duty. You must reach deep and pull forth courage. For courage is what you will need to set an example for your men to follow. Do that, and we might just hold until the Third arrives. Fail in that.
Merritt fell silent for a moment, looking each in the eye.
Well, that will not happen, will it?
No, sir, Hollux said.
It will most certainly not. Tried voiced his agreement. Steiger, Merritt turned to him, I understand your men have seen considerable action.
Yes, sir, they have.
Then you shall act as our reserve, Merritt said. We shall use your legionaries to reinforce where needed, to plug the holes and force the enemy back over the wall. Think you can manage that?
Yes, sir, Steiger said. He had expected as much. My boys and I will stand ready.
Enemy in sight!
The shout ripped across the fort. The officers' heads turned to the north. A column of riders had emerged from the tree line and was working its way down the hill, following the road. Several riders had pulled off to the side and remained on the hilltop as the column continued to ride from the forest and stretch down the hill. Steiger supposed these were officers. They were clearly studying the fort as the bulk of the column continued past them. Steiger could hear the enemy cavalry singing a melodious tune, but at this distance could not make out the words.
Carbo, Merritt said, turning to face the cavalry lieutenant, it is time for you to depart.
Yes, sir, Carbo said. I would appreciate it if you rode through the town on your way out of the valley, Merritt said, gesturing vaguely toward the south, and let the good people know it is time to evacuate.
Yes, sir.
Carbo gave a salute, which Merritt returned.
Take care, sir.
Tell the general to hurry.
I will, sir, Carbo said.
Carbo gave Steiger a nod before working his way down the rampart to where his troopers were waiting. Steiger watched as Carbo pulled himself up into the saddle. The cavalry lieutenant raised his hand and let it fall, pointing forward, giving the soundless order to ride. Amidst the sound of heavy hooves, they trotted through the gate. Steiger continued to watch as the troop crossed the trenches, turned to the west, and rode hard around the fort before angling south and being lost to view.
Lieutenant Tried, Merritt said, kindly issue the recall for our men outside. Also, see that the bridges are pulled up from the trenches. I see no point in making it easier for the enemy.
Yes, sir. Tried hurried away. A few minutes later, a man atop the gatehouse blew his horn, sounding the recall. The notes were nearly pure and rang out on the cool morning air. The men outside immediately dropped what they were doing and started for the protection of the fort.
Well, the elf spoke up, drawing their attention.
Ellie was looking out toward the hill where the road emerged from the forest. The cavalry column had given way to enemy infantry, marching four abreast. They, too, were singing. Like a snake coming out of a hole, they began to work their way down and into the valley.
Things are about to get interesting.
Chapter 16.
It's clear, sir, a lookout yelled down from above, having leaned out over the wall, eyeballing the other side of the gate.
No enemy closer than the nearest trench, and they are just standing around, bored-like.
Only a handful, sir.
Open the gate, Merritt ordered.
Several men standing by to do just that raised the locking bar, which landed with a heavy thud. They began pulling the gate open.
Stand ready,
Horrocks, who was atop the gate, called to his men. The bowmen stepped up to the barricade and knocked their arrows.
Are you sure about this, sir?
Steiger stood to Merritt's side. Hinges creaking, the gate began to open. Steiger had his company formed up into a two-ranked battle line just behind the gate.
Raise shields, Tiro ordered. Draw swords.
The shields came up off the ground, and swords seemed to jump out of scabbards.
Unfortunately, I am, Merritt answered, with a sidelong glance at Steiger.
Absently, the prefect drummed on the side of his chest armor as he shifted his gaze to the gate. The prefect's armor was of an older style. It was lovingly cared for, and yet had also seen some action, for there were little dents, scrapes, and nicks from battle damage.
Yes, Merritt said, drawing a long breath. We must attend this parley. Anything to delay our enemies serves our needs.
You don't have to go personally, sir, Steiger said. I could represent you well enough.
Our enemy is generally known to be honorable in these situations, Merritt said. We should have little to fear.
Except when they are not, Steiger said with some heat. Like in Kor Atoll. Creef is a good example of that.
Merritt was silent a moment.
You must understand, victory is everything, Merritt said. Nothing comes second. War must be waged in a terrible, total, and complete manner. There are times in pursuit of victory when we are called to do terrible things. Almost anything, and I mean anything, goes. Rules don't apply. The sacking of villages and towns, though repugnant, is an acceptable means to an end. Merritt paused, and his look became quite hard. Even small farms are fair game, like the one your prisoner took. We don't have to like it, nor condone it, but this is the world we live in. To the victor goes everything. Merritt paused, his eyes flicking to Steiger's men. I, for one, would rather the Empire be the conqueror than the vanquished. There are times when that means ordering the death and destruction of that which we love. Merritt stepped closer and put a hand on Steiger's shoulder. To be successful at our chosen craft, you must take this lesson to heart, no matter how distasteful it is going down. Steiger sucked in a breath and let it out as he thought carefully on the prefect's words. In all this chaos and madness that war brings with it, Merritt continued, there are times when gentlemen from both sides are able to come together and treat each other honorably in parley. For a brief moment, we can set aside the horrors of what we do and pretend that we are not the monsters we have become. The gate ceased its movement with a loud thud. Merritt gave him a meaningful look. Do you follow?
I understand, sir.
Good, Merritt said, taking a step back. It was a hard lesson for me as well, but having learned it made me a better soldier.
Tiro, Steiger called. You and Tig are coming with us. In the absence of Varys, Aesus, you have the formation.
Aesus looked startled for a moment, then recovered. He drew himself up and saluted as Tiro hurried over with Tig. Both carried their shields.
Yes, sir, Aesus replied.
Might I join you also? Steiger and Merritt turned to see Ellie had joined them. The elf's ability to move about unnoticed was uncanny.
Why would you wish to expose yourself to the enemy? Merritt asked.
The elves as a people have parted ways with the Empire. You may inadvertently give the impression that is not so.
I have no compelling desire to do so, Ellie said, other than curiosity.
You're bored already? Tiro said, incredulous.
Sergeant, Merritt snapped, mind your tongue with our guest.
Sorry, sir.
It's quite all right, Ellie said to the prefect. Sergeant Tiro and I are old acquaintances. You see, we previously served together. I consider him a good friend.
Merritt glanced between the two of them.
The wilds, then?
Yes, sir, Tiro said. Ellie and I have been through some rough times.
Addressing your concern on impressions, Ellie said, today I only represent myself.
I see.
Merritt released a breath that was almost a huff.
Very well. If you wish to join us, then so be it.
Merritt started forward through the gate, with Steiger and Ellie trailing. Tiro and Tig followed a couple of steps behind. To their front, at around 500 yards, Steiger saw a few hundred enemy heavy infantry. The enemy was busily erecting a camp, including the beginnings of a defensive berm. Steiger could hear the muffled cracks that signified axe parties at work in the forest. As they walked out of the fort, a second column of infantry was starting to snake its way down the hill. Merritt strode up to the edge of the first trench. A delegation waited on the other side. Steiger saw two officers and what he took to be a sergeant waiting patiently. Their manner was relaxed, as if they had not a concern in the world.
"You requested a parley," Merritt said curtly. It was not framed as a question, but a simple statement of fact.
"Yes, I did," the officer Steiger took to be in charge replied in fluent common.
His armor was more ornate and expensive than the others. There was not even a hint of an accent in his tone, and he sounded quite cultured.
"I am Senior Captain Golves."
Golves was perhaps 5 years older than Steiger. He had the look of a hardened soldier, but also the refinement of a noble. A thick scar on his lower lip marred his features. Golves paused and gestured to the officer standing next to him.
"This is my lieutenant, Okal. And you, sir, may I have your name?"
"I am Prefect Merritt, in command of Fort Covenant."
"It was my understanding that Tribune Declan held that esteemed honor," Golves said. A slight hint of curiosity hung in his tone.
"Your intelligence appears to be flawed and out of date," Merritt said.
"So it seems," Golves said, his eyes sliding to Steiger and then Ellie, who had pulled the hood of his cloak up.
"And these gentlemen, I know not their names. Would you be considerate enough to introduce me?"
"Of course," Merritt said. "May I present Lieutenant Steiger and..."
"Steiger?" Golves said. An amused look came over him. "Aren't you supposed to be in disgrace and under confinement?"
"More faulty intelligence,"
Steiger growled. Golves's manner was beginning to irritate him. Golves brought a hand up to cover his mouth as he gave a slight chuckle.
"You, sir, I have been chasing a good long way," Golves continued, lowering the hand. He pointed a finger. "Lieutenant Steiger, you have left a trail of destruction with your passage that honestly has been quite surprising. May I say, it is truly an honor to finally meet you face to face after so many weeks on the chase. You are such a formidable opponent that it seems a shame to have finally run you down." Golves paused and gestured at the fort with both hands. "Here in the middle of nowhere." Steiger wasn't at first sure how to take that. Initially he thought the enemy officer was playing with him, but then decided otherwise, as Golves appeared quite serious. "Steiger," Merritt hissed after several heartbeats of silence, "do the gracious thing and accept the bloody compliment, would you?" "It is an honor to meet you as well," Steiger said, drawing himself up, "and if you must know, I am precisely where I intended to be." Golves offered a slight bow, but looked far from convinced. "If I am correct in my thinking," Steiger said, having thought on the enemy officer's words, "it was your company that has dogged our heels something fierce."
"Is that so?"
"Yes. After you attacked a section of my men out on forage, I happily gave chase," Golves said, seeming rather pleased with himself. "But now I have finally caught up. All hunts must come to an end. You've nowhere to run." Steiger gave a shrug rather than reply. "What do you want?" Merritt asked. "In the interest of saving lives, I ask humbly that you give up the fort," Golves said. "I was a guest of the Riven once before," Merritt said in a hard tone. "I will not subject myself to that indignity again."
"I see," Golves said, and made a show of thinking, stroking his jaw.
"In that case, I am prepared to offer you and your men free passage, provided you surrender your standards and weapons first." Steiger glanced to Merritt, hoping the prefect would not consider such an offer. To surrender one's standards was an unforgivable offense. It would effectively end their careers, or possibly worse, sign their death warrants.
"Captain Golves," Merritt said, "I'm afraid I will have to decline your generous offer. If you want them, you will just have to take them."
Golves let slip an unhappy scowl. Then his face lit up as if he had stumbled upon a fantastic idea. Steiger understood the enemy captain was playing a game, which he seemed to be enjoying.
"What if I permit you to keep your standards and weapons?" Golves asked. "Would that satisfy your honor?"
"I would be compelled to decline your generous offer," Merritt said. "I intend to keep my fort. The only way you can have it is by seizing it forcefully."
Golves let slip another unhappy scowl, sharing a look with his lieutenant.
"I am but the tip of the spear. In my humble estimation, you have no hope whatsoever of holding. If you compel us into an assault, I will tell you honestly, none shall be spared. Death will be your only escape."
"That may be so," Merritt said stiffly, "but I will not give up my fort. Unless you have other business, I believe we are done here."
Merritt turned to go.
"I understand you are holding a prisoner," Golves said. "A Lieutenant Creef."
"Your information is correct," Merritt said.
"We want him back," Golves said. "I have two of your officers. I propose a trade."
"Who?"
Merritt's eyebrows rose. "Who do you have?"
"Prefect Lears and Lieutenant Tevis," Golves said. "I'm afraid Lieutenant Tevis made the mistake of thinking he too could hold his fort."
"And you let him live?" Merritt asked.
"What other prisoners do you have?"
Golves's expression hardened. "Alas, we did not take any. The only reason the poor lieutenant escaped his fate was for intelligence purposes. Now that we have all that we need from him, a destitute noble is of no use to us, other than in trade, of course. Should you refuse, I will have him immediately executed in the most brutal fashion I can think of."
Merritt became very still.
"Which is why I suggest you seriously consider my previous offer," Golves said. "You all have an opportunity to walk away with your standards and your lives."
"I will think on it," Merritt said, appearing to give a little.
"You have an hour," Golves said.
2 hours, Merritt said.
"An hour," Golves said.
"If I don't have it then, I shall put my prisoners to death."
"An hour," Merritt agreed. "You shall have my answer at that time,
I will take you up on the offer of the prisoner exchange.
Sir, Steiger said, you can't give them Creve.
Be quiet, Steiger, Merritt snapped. This is my decision, not yours.
When do you desire to conduct the exchange? Golds asked.
In an hour's time, when I give you my answer.
Will that be sufficient? Merritt said.
Golds nodded. Lieutenant Steiger shall deliver the prisoner and my answer.
Very good.
Golds' eyes moved to Ellie.
I was not introduced to this other gentleman.
I am no gentleman, Ellie said, and drew back the hood of his cloak.
Ellie Farr, at your service.
Golds made no show of surprise, other than the blinking of his eyes.
Steiger noticed the enemy officer became quite still. He then shifted his stance and seemed to relax.
I thought you elves had quit the Empire, Golds said, giving Ellie a slight bow, which the elf returned.
Again, Steiger said, it would seem you are receiving faulty intelligence.
Golds' eyes turned to Steiger and narrowed.
I will see you in an hour, Golds said frostily.
With that, he began walking back to his budding encampment, his lieutenant and sergeant following him.
Sir, Steiger said to Merritt, we cannot give up the fort.
Lieutenant, Merritt said, I have no intention of doing that. I was simply buying us time and playing his game.
What of Creve? Steiger said. He is an important prisoner, and the son of...
I know who he is, Merritt snapped. I will not leave two of our own in the enemy's hands. I have been their guest. Trust me, it is not a pleasant experience.
With that, Merritt began making his way back to the fort.
Steiger watched the prefect go before stepping over to Tiro.
What do you think?
I think, Tiro said with a glance at the enemy column coming down the hill, we are in the shit, sir.
That was my thinking as well, Steiger said. As soon as that army comes up in its entirety, they will attack.
I agree, sir, Tiro said. However, they will not need their whole army. What with the moon being almost full, they may even try our walls this evening.
I say, Ellie said cheerfully, having sidled up to the two of them, isn't this exciting?
Tiro shot a frown at the elf. Steiger just shook his head.
Ellie pointed towards the hill where the road exited the forest. Another formation of heavy infantry had emerged and was moving down the hill toward the encampment. Steiger almost felt sick at the sight. There would be hard hours ahead.
Exciting is not how I would characterize it, Steiger said.
An hour later, Steiger stepped through the gate. Tiro and two legionaries dragged Creve along. As they neared, Creve took one look at the waiting Golds and the rapidly growing Riven encampment and began laughing, nearly hysterically.
I told you, Steiger, Creve said. My father is coming to kill you all.
Tiro reached over and slapped Creve hard on the face.
Keep your tongue.
Golds did not seem at all fazed by Tiro's treatment of Lieutenant Creve. He just stood there and waited patiently. With him were his lieutenant, Lears, and Tevis. He also had two men who each carried a long wooden plank. Both Lears and Tevis appeared to have been worked over fairly well. Tevis looked up. His right eye was swollen shut, but his left widened at the sight of Steiger standing across the other side of the trench. After a moment, he averted his gaze and looked at the ground, clearly shamefaced.
Steiger, Golds said, all business. Do I have your permission to run these planks across the trench to effect our exchange?
Steiger gave a curt nod, at which Golds motioned his men forward. Once it was done, Golds looked expectantly at Steiger.
My men first, Steiger said. Then I will send your man.
Do I have your word of honor on that?
You do, sir, Steiger said. Though I prefer nothing better than to gut this murdering, raping bastard, I will send him to you.
What you do with him after is your concern.
Golds' eyes slid from Steiger to Creve. A look of contempt and disgust washed over the enemy officer's face.
Go, Golds snapped, pulling his gaze away from Creve to Lears and Tevis. Return to your own.
Tevis started across first, Lears appearing worse for wear, needing a prodding before he too shuffled along. Halfway across, he stumbled and almost toppled into the trench below.
Tiro moved forward and assisted him.
Right, Steiger said once the two Imperial officers had safely crossed, kicking Creve lightly with a boot.
On your way.
Creve didn't even hesitate. He walked boldly over the planks, stopped on the other side, and offered Steiger a mocking salute. "See you soon," Creef said.
"If you do," Steiger said, still angered that the man had been freed, "I will be sure to give you a few inches of steel."
Creef laughed at him.
"I think it's you who will be the one stuck with riven steel."
He started walking toward the enemy encampment. Golf motioned for his lieutenant to accompany Creef.
"I take it your prefect's answer is no."
"Did you really expect us to capitulate?" Steiger asked.
"No, I most certainly did not," Dolves answered, and looked over the fort's walls. "We were always going to have to do this the hard way."
"Lieutenant Agger," Steiger said. "He's one of yours, isn't he?"
"Oh, no," Golf said, with an amused chuckle. "I'm afraid he's one of yours. It's just that we pay him better."
"So Agger's your source of information, then?"
"Perhaps." Golves offered a smile of sorts, and then sobered. "I am sorry that you will have to soon die. You have proven to be a worthy and honorable adversary."
"I shall be sorry to have to kill you," Steiger replied. "You seem honorable as well."
With that, Golves offered Steiger a nod and left with his two soldiers, trekking their way back toward their camp. They had left their planks in place. Steiger used his boot to tip them over and into the trench. He swung his gaze across the two freed prisoners. Lears had collapsed to the ground. The prefect had a broken arm, and his face was hardly recognizable from the pounding he looked to have taken during questioning. The man's nose was broken too, as were several teeth. Dried blood had darkened his filthy tunic.
"Thank you," Tevis said, tears in his eyes. The lieutenant's face was nearly purple from bruising.
"Thank you for trading us."
"Had it been up to me, I would not have traded. You owe your thanks to Prefect Merritt."
"What?" Tevis said, incredulous. "You would have left us in their hands?"
"I don't think either of you was worth trading," Steiger said.
"That's because you're a bastard," Lears glared at him, "just like your father."
"I am," Steiger said.
"Tiro, see that the prefect is helped along. In his current state, I doubt he can make it on his own."
"Aye, sir," Tiro said.
With that, Steiger strode through the gate to the fort.
Chapter 17.
"I would have expected them to attack last night, sir," Tiro said, his gaze straying out towards the camp. The early morning air was crisp, just like the day before. A fog that had partially shrouded the land had mostly lifted, revealing the full extent of the enemy's camp and its activities throughout the night. Steiger, Tiro, and Ellie were standing on the north-facing wall. The enemy army had encamped just beyond the second trench, their camp filling up the entire north side of the valley. There were thousands of tents, and even more smoke trails that drifted slowly up into the sky. Steiger had to admit, it was an impressive sight. What was more incredible was that the enemy army was still arriving, with long columns of fresh formations marching out of the forest road nearly every hour. Though the fort's capital could easily reach the enemy's camp, the prefect had held back from opening hostilities. He did not wish to speed up the unpleasantness that was sure to come. The sun had been up for maybe an hour. Steiger had finished walking the wall and found Tiro and Ellie studying the enemy. Overnight, with thousands of men working by moonlight, the Riven had thrown up an impressive defensive berm that was threatening to completely encircle the fort.
"It seems they don't want us getting out either," Steiger said, surveying the defensive works.
"Would you?" Tiro asked, "if things were reversed?"
Steiger shook his head.
The enemy had brought up some artillery and set it up in a small field. Steiger counted four large machines that appeared capable of firing 4 to possibly 6 pound shot. Wagons had been moved up, and teams were busily unloading shot, trampling the wheat as they went about their work. Worse, there was significant activity in the camp beyond, as a number of formations were assembling. A few had marched out and were working their way around to the east side of the fort. Steiger let out a slow breath. The enemy did not seem to be in any pressing hurry to launch their assault, though from what he was seeing, it would likely come sometime this morning.
"Let's be grateful for the time they've wasted," Steiger said. "Every moment squandered brings the third that much closer to relieving us."
"I am sorry, sir," Tiro said, "but that army across the way is much larger than the third and their auxiliary cohorts. Will the general even be able to relieve us?"
"It is," Steiger said, "and he has to."
I'm just saying, sir.
I know, Steiger said. I know.
This is much more exciting than remaining at headquarters with your general as an observer,
Ellie said, speaking up.
I am so very pleased that I came, and even more so that I made the decision to remain.
Ellie gets bored easily, sir. Tiro shook his head. You have to watch him, or he gets himself into trouble. And sometimes others, too.
Get myself in the trouble? Ellie said, aghast, turning to the sergeant.
Why, Tiro, I know...
It's the help he needs getting out of trouble that's the problem, sir, Tiro said, flashing Ellie a grin. I could tell you a few stories, sir. Believe me, he bears watching.
Tiro looked as if he were about to say more, but paused and slowly turned his gaze on Steiger.
The sergeant's eyes narrowed, as if something had just occurred to him.
You know, he is very much like you, sir. Sort of attracts trouble.
Do you? Ellie asked with interest. General Treen mentioned something about that, but I wondered if he was jesting. He is a hard man to read. Do you really attract trouble?
Steiger rolled his eyes.
He does, Tiro said.
And don't bother denying it, sir. Like when you ordered the company to attack that isolated section of men back at that farm. Only they weren't so isolated, were they? Gulls got on our trail and chased us something good.
Oh, my, Ellie said. We're going to have so much fun together, I can just tell.
Wait a moment, you can't blame...
Steiger was interrupted by a loud creaking, followed by a thud that came from out beyond in the field. This was immediately followed by a high-pitched whistling.
Down!
Tiro pulled Steiger to the ground behind the barricade. Ellie dove and covered his head with his arms. A heartbeat later, there was a deep, shuddering impact behind them. Steiger looked and saw a great gout of dirt fall in a shower. When it settled, a crater 3 feet around had appeared where moments before there had only been grass. Steiger could see the white ball, partially exposed, sitting in the middle of the crater. Thankfully, no one had been injured. A horn sounded the call to arms. After a hesitation, the horn blew again. Barracks doors burst open. Like angry ants, auxiliaries began to boil out, making their way to their posts, tying helmet straps or slipping on their swords. Steiger looked up and over the edge of the barricade at the enemy, just as there was another loud creaking out in the field, followed almost immediately by a thud. Steiger tracked the ball with his eyes as it arced up into the sky, whistling. The round contacted the tower to his left, on the corner of the fort. It was a dead-on hit, and before he could blink, the wooden tower came apart. With a great splintering crash, it tumbled backward into the fort. Before Steiger could pull his eyes away, another ball slammed into the wooden wall just below them, with a loud crack. Steiger felt the impact. The ball bounced back and out into one of the trenches. The fourth machine let fly with a ball that sailed clean over the wall and into the parade ground. It landed several yards from Steiger's men, who were forming up. They scattered.
Tiro, Steiger pointed. Get down there. Move our men back to the other side of the fort, preferably behind the keep. Have them shelter there until called.
Yes, sir,
Tiro said, and started off.
I'm on it.
Tiro informs me that when you learned of the enemy army, it was your idea to come. I now see why you wanted to remain here. Steiger turned an astounded look upon the elf, wondering if he had gone barking mad. He supposed that Ellie was teasing him.
Well, Steiger said with a chuckle, we're both crazy for having decided to stay, aren't we?
Undoubtedly, Ellie said, and bared his teeth in a full grin at Steiger. Small and needle sharp, the teeth looked like they belonged in the mouth of a predator. Steiger resisted the urge to shudder and turned his gaze back toward the enemy, who were reloading the four machines to fire anew. Beyond the field, a large number of the enemy had lined the edge of their camp. They gave a great cheer to the artillery crews. Several waved back, but quickly returned to their work. There was a crack off to the right. From the last remaining tower on the north wall sprung a bolt. The overly large dart shot out toward one of the enemy machines. The aim was low, and it struck the defensive berm, harmlessly kicking up a spray of dirt. Auxiliaries on the wall gave a defiant shout. A number of catcalls were sent the enemy's way. The crew down on the parade ground began loading the fort's only catapult. When it finally released, the ball sailed upward and out of the fort, whistling toward the enemy's camp. Steiger tracked its path. In a rather anticlimactic fashion, the ball landed somewhere in the middle of the camp. He could not tell if it had done any damage, but hoped it had. The artillery duel continued for more than an hour. Lieutenant Tride stood atop the north wall with a pair of white flags. He used them to signal the crew below in an attempt to direct the fire toward one of the enemy machines. The more he worked at it, the more it seemed the fire became ever more erratic.